This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with former Congressman Jeff Landry from New Iberia, still active in politics on Capitol Hill and perhaps a candidate for office in Louisiana sometime soon. Also on the show, Democratic political consultant Trey Orso and Republican Scott Wilfong, likely to be on opposite sides of the latest with Governor Jindal, who has once again skewered his own party, saying the Republicans need to stop bedwetting, the governor's words. We'll talk about Bobby Jindal, the new bellicose Bobby Jindal, who says the GOP needs to start kicking around the other guys. And he's on a 64-parish tour in Louisiana, started yesterday in Shreveport, and we'll talk about this as well. But first, the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it is 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. And we begin with former Congressman Jeff Landry. He lost a tough race to Charles Bustani when they were thrown essentially into the same district last year because Louisiana lost a congressional seat. And good morning, Congressman Landry.
Good morning, Jim.
Well, you're no longer a member of the U.S. House of Representatives, but you're still active on Capitol Hill. What's the latest with you?
Well, I spent last week on Capitol Hill participating in some panels for the sugar industry. I had received a call from the sugar industry asking if I would participate in these panels that basically start to promote a zero-sum sugar foreign policy. And you know, first of all, we're talking about people's jobs and their livelihoods, Jim. You know, it's not a faceless policy. And second, the U.S. sugar policy exists for one reason and one reason only, because of foreign subsidies. You know, there's no one that's a bigger supporter of free enterprise than me, and free enterprise normally means free trade, but free trade has to equal fair trade. And that's what we were discussing last week in Washington.
So you're kind of taking the path that Charlie Malanson took. He was head of the sugarcane industry for a while, wasn't he?
He was. He was. And the gentleman who took his place is a great guy by the name of Jim Seymour, who was one of those who called. Because I was a big supporter of the sugar industry and our farmers here in South Louisiana and know how important our jobs are here in South Louisiana, I fought for them back in the 112th Congress. And so they looked to me to go back and participate in these panels to try to convince people that the policies that we have in place, which is a zero cost to the taxpayer, it's always been a zero cost to the taxpayer. It's not a direct, it's not a policy whereby our sugar farmers get a direct payment from the U.S. Treasury. And because they're debating the farm bill today, they wanted to make sure that people in Washington understood the importance of that policy.
Now, there are those, including some conservatives like George Will, who says this is a big government giveaway. James Gill, now of the Baton Rouge Advocate, he opined that that was the case. How do you answer them?
I would argue to them that, look, the policy that we're promoting today actually says, look, it is a zero. It does not cost the taxpayer a dime. They claim that it raises the price of our goods that are made with sugar. I would say to go back and look at the price of sugar, the average price of sugar that farmers have been paid over the last 30 years, and there's only a 2-cent difference. And then I would look to them and ask, okay, look, if we unilaterally disarmed our sugar farmers here, if we took away our policy here in the United States and we allowed Brazil to continue to subsidize their sugar industry to the tune of $4 billion a year, and they control 50% of the market share, what happens when Brazil decides that they want to unilaterally raise the price of sugar? What, you know, with 70% of the goods that you eat or consume made with sugar, what does that kind of policy do to the cost of the food that we eat here in the United States? So we would basically be telling our sugar farmers, we're going to unilaterally disarm you. It's kind of like Reagan agreeing to take all the nukes out of the United States while letting Gorbachev keep all of his.
All right. 297-5633 is the number for Jeff Landry, an interesting man, former St. Martin Parish Sheriff's Deputy. He's a lawyer as well. He was a police officer in Parks, Louisiana, and a sergeant in the Louisiana National Guard, and he served on Capitol Hill for a brief period, one term, January 3, 2011 to January 3, 2013. Do you miss it?
Do I miss serving our country?
Do you miss,
or do I miss,
no, do you miss
Congress?
being a member of the U.S. House of Representatives?
No. Look, I enjoyed the time that I served. I appreciated the opportunity that the people of the old 3rd Congressional District gave me to represent them. But at the end of the day, chips always fall where they may, and I just move forward. I was never one of those that said that I had to be an elected official. I don't aspire to move from one political office to another. I just want to make sure that here in Louisiana we get to live in the land of the free and the home of the brave. And I want America to be exceptional again, and I want Louisiana to be a part of it. So anything that I can do to help create jobs in Louisiana and to put Louisiana first and foremost in the United States, I try to do.
You got those talking points down. Any thoughts about running for Congress next year?
No, look, the one thing that I did to, I guess, fulfill my political appetite was start a super PAC. That super PAC is Restore Our Republic, and the goal of that super PAC is to expand and preserve conservative members in the House of Representatives, because I recognized one thing. When I went to Washington as a Republican and a conservative, conservative first and a Republican second, that at the end of the day, the problem is not just Democrats. The problem is people in Washington who put themselves first before the people that they serve. And so I want to make sure that there still are a number of people like me up on the Hill, and I want to make sure they stay there and we can expand those numbers.
Jeff Landry is the guest, a former congressman. When you were on Capitol Hill, you were a member of the Tea Party caucus and considered to be a leader in the Tea Party. Do you consider that description as a compliment, or do you back away from it?
Oh, no, absolutely not. Look, I think that the Tea Party is a movement, and it represents the American spirit more than any other movement in the United States. And look, I was proud to be a member of the Tea Party caucus. I was proud to be a participant in that particular movement. So no, I don't at all, shy away from that label. I think that movement, and of course we've seen the things that movement was subjected to by liberals such as the Obama administration in the way that they treated that movement with, through the IRS scandal that we have today.
Well, have you been audited, Congressman?
I have not been audited, but I also haven't applied for a 501(c) either.
Well, this super PAC, will you be active next year in the Landrieu Cassidy race?
I don't know if we'll be active in the Senate races. This particular super PAC is designed for House races because most of the big conservative groups around the country tend to target Senate races. And for some reason, I think it's sad that we're overlooking the importance of the United States House of Representatives. We do intend to be active in a number of House races around the country. We hope to be active here in Louisiana in some of the races that are coming up. We have an open seat in the 6th Congressional District.
Yes, we do. And some would say you're should be a likely candidate, even though you're saying you're not running. Why not that seat?
Well, I certainly appreciate all of the kind words that people have offered me and encouraged me to run in that particular seat. I never say never, but again, at the end of the day, it's not so important to Jeff Landrieu that he is elected. What's important to me is that the people who serve both me and the constituents in Louisiana are strong, solid conservatives that believe in making America great again.
Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Congressman Landry.
Yes. With your emphasis on politicians putting the public ahead of their personal interest, do you think that they should impose a rule that no one can be a lobbyist for corporate interest until, say, at least 5 years after they leave office?
I don't have a problem with that. I know there's a ban on the United States Congress right now. There's a one-year cooling period. I think it's 2 years before you can register as a lobbyist. I mean, I don't have a problem with that at all. I don't have a problem with term limits either. Of course, I was the guy that went to Washington and declined my congressional health care and retirement because I don't think elected officials should be helping themselves to those types of benefits when the average American struggles with a broken Social Security system and a broken health care system.
What do you think about the healthcare system under Obamacare?
I think it's a disaster, and I think that it's going to implode upon itself. I can't see it being sustainable in the way that it's currently written. Everywhere I go, I hear from small business owners that I think that this is the biggest concern for them as they look towards 2014, and I think it's a drag on the economy as a whole.
Last year in your race against Charles Bustani, he really took it to you. I mean, one Republican against another, and of course you gave as good as you got, but do you have any hard feelings?
No, not at all. I mean, look, if at the end of the day, as Republicans, if we're not able to clean up our own house, if we're not willing to take on Republicans who we don't believe represent conservative values 100% of the time, then I think we're a bit hypocritical in just going out there and complaining about Democrats. And so that's what I did. The race against Bustani was never a race about me. It was about the message out there. And, you know, it was tough, you know, being outspent 5-2 in a district that was 75% still his, put us at a disadvantage. But again, at the end of the day, it's not about me. It's about the message. And if Bustani goes out there and he votes more conservative, then you know what? That's a win.
Well, you're 42 years old. You're same age as Governor Jindal. And as I said, you have a resume that most people in public life don't have. You're a military veteran. You're a police veteran. You're a lawyer. You're a business person. And you've got a term in Congress behind you. So if you don't run for Congress next year, I would suspect you'll run for something sometime soon.
Well, I'm going to continue to travel around the state and spread that message. And when enough people find a place that they believe I would do well in serving Louisiana, and it's something that fits what the good Lord would like me to do in my family, then I guess you'll see me on the ballot. If not, we'll just continue to spread that message.
What would you like to be? What office would you like to hold?
You know, again, there's no office that I have pinned up on my wall and say, you know what, that's the office that I want. At the end of the day, I just want to look back on and when I get to my golden years and look at my little boy and say, you know what, Daddy did everything he could to make sure that you grew up in an exceptional America.
Well, you could run for attorney general. You could run for governor. Any thoughts about those positions?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the statewide elections are coming up in 2015, and again, that's why I'm traveling around the state. You know, I'm back in the private sector doing oil and gas work, and we'll just see. I'll continue to participate in your radio program anytime that you ask me to be on.
Well, what about the governor? What do you think of him? How's he doing?
How's the governor doing? You know, I think that, you know, there are times when I agree with the governor wholeheartedly. I wrote an opinion piece during the session on the Medicaid expansion. I think that he was right in rejecting and using his will to bend the legislature in rejecting the Medicaid expansion under Obamacare. I think that he was right in putting on the table the discussion of taxes and the income tax here in Louisiana. Sometimes I don't always agree with the process that he uses, but you know what? That's his right. You know, so at the end of the day, I think that Governor Jindal has done a very good job, all in all, in moving Louisiana to the top of some lists that before we weren't on.
What can he do to improve?
What can he do to improve? Well, he's only got 3 years left to improve it.
Two and a half years.
I think that continuing to spread the message, you know, I saw the piece that he put out in Politico this morning. I think that, again, continuing to move that message of conservatism and how and strict constitutionalism helps us not only in Louisiana, but helps us nationally. So I think continuing to spread that message around continues to help the state.
Well, we look forward to a return visit from former Congressman Jeff Landry, one short term on Capitol Hill, and I'm sure he'll be back in public life in some way as a candidate. And you're involved in various endeavors, including this Super PAC. What's the name of the Super PAC?
The name of the Super PAC is Restore Our Republic, and you can go online and you can just Google search it, or you can just go to RORPAC.com, www.RORPAC.com.
Restore Our Republic. Jeff Landry. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Jim. Have a great day.
You too. And we'll be back with Scott Wilfong and Trey Orso after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside our area, it's 877-217-5757. Republican Scott Wilfong, Democrat Trey Orso. Trey is the former executive director of the Louisiana Democratic Party, and both of our guests at this time are involved in politics near and far. And Governor Jindal continues to make news in his home state and beyond, telling his fellow Republicans in a guest column for Politico, the overall level of panic and apology for the operative class in our party is absurd and unmerited. It's time, the governor says, to stop the bedwetting. Let's stop defeating ourselves, go on offense, and go kick the other guys around. Tough guy, Bobby Jindal. Trey Orso, what do you think?
I don't know, Jim. I was traveling the last couple of days, and I started seeing this come across on my phone yesterday, and it just, I mean, it's a little bit perplexing. Right after the election, the governor said that the Republicans needed to quit being the stupid party and that they should go after the 47% and the 53% and any other percents that add up to 100. And then yesterday he writes that they need to start kicking people around. So I'm not quite sure what direction he's trying to point himself. I think that part of the problem is that looking at Republican primaries, presidential primaries, you know, you just have to get so far to the right to be able to compete and be legitimate in these primaries that maybe he just thinks that's where he really needs to go. But the real thing that had me worried, it was pretty touch and go on my way to the office this morning, because later in the same story, he wrote that the left, which I guess I would be considered the left, thinks the earth is flat. So I was kind of worried that I might just drive off the edge at some point, but I was able to make it safely to the office and didn't fall off the edge of the earth. Oh, so I'm really happy about that.
I'm glad you got where you're going. Okay.
Yeah.
Scott Wilfong, Bobby Jindal, sounding tough, flexing those muscles of his.
Well, you know, Bobby's looking at, you know, what he said a while back after the election was crafted to be towards one audience, which was voters. And I think, you know, what he wrote today was in Politico, right? I, you know, most of my friends that I play golf with and drink coffee with don't read Politico. Trey and I do, and you do. And I think this was a message crafted towards the political culture of our state. And, you know, it was intended to have a certain effect, and it has, because we're here on your show talking about it. So, you know, just probably just another good political move, you know, is what Jindal thought he was doing.
Well, the Washington Post responded to the governor's words in Politico by saying Jindal has gone from diagnosing what's wrong with the Republican Party to personifying it.
The Washington Post, we conservatives don't look towards the Washington Post too often for advice on how to run the party.
Not dropped off at the Wilfong house
each
morning. Okay, all right. Well, the governor at the same time has embarked on a 64-parish tour of Louisiana. Kind of interesting. His poll numbers, as we know, have dropped some, and now he's going to do some retail politics in his home state. And he started yesterday by signing legislation to protect hunting game donations and combat hunger, and he did the signing at the Shreveport Rescue Mission. So, nationally, it's tough guy Bobby Jindal. Home, it's compassionate Bobby Jindal. Scott, is this going to work?
Well, you know, I think he realizes, like I said, that ultimately he can have all the political, you know, political backing in the world, but you've got to get the voters to support you. And you know, if he doesn't wind up running for president, you know, he's as you said earlier, I think he's 42 years old. There's certainly, you know, 4 years is all he would have to sit out before he could run for governor again. So, you know, usually every 4 years, 20-something people run for president of the United States, and 19 or 20 of them go home disappointed. So, you know, I'm sure he's not putting all his eggs in one basket.
It's not beyond the realm of possibility that he could jump in the Senate race against Mary Landrieu.
Not at all, I wouldn't think.
Would he be a viable challenger?
Oh, certainly. But I think you have to look at where the Cassidy campaign is now. I don't think that Bobby would, you know, kind of step on their toes. I think that that horse is kind of out of the barn, and
well,
I think it might.
Well, Cassidy has switched horses with his political consulting team. He now has the David Vitter team representing him as opposed to the Bobby Jindal team. And I would imagine the governor and his staff are not too pleased about that.
Well, you know, it's, again, internal politics. You know, there's a different crowd of folks that are involved with these races. And, you know, certainly not. Would it be just shocking if Congressman Cassidy decided to stay and continue serving in the House? At this point, I only know of one person that's announced publicly for his seat. So, you know, if we get to the fall and things aren't, you know, exactly where everyone thinks they ought to be, sure, certainly there's been bigger surprises in politics before.
And Trey, what do you think the next move is for the governor politically?
Well, I mean, I think that this 64 parish tour says a lot. I've been involved in statewide campaigns here for going on 20 years, and I can tell you that very few officials announce a 64 parish tour if they don't have their eyes on running for a statewide office. I mean, he's in the second term of a lame duck term, so it really raises people's interest in what he's really up to. I don't think for a second that Governor Jindal is at all worried about Bill Cassidy's campaign or the fact that Bill Cassidy has announced that he's running against Senator Landrieu next year. If by the time we get to next year, if his presidential aspirations aren't taken off any better than they are now, and he thinks there's an opportunity for him to further his political career, I don't think that he would give a moment's thought to stepping all over Bill Cassidy's campaign. I just don't think that would bother him at all.
I think you're absolutely right, and I'm with you. This 64 parish campaign is curious, and it could be the prelude to a run for the United States Senate.
Well, and let me put another wrinkle in that. There's another legislative session before next year, and there's already several legislators are talking about filing bills to go back to a closed primary. So if that were to change back and you had a Republican primary and a Democrat primary, you would have Jindal versus Cassidy and only Republicans voting.
We've changed that now, what, twice? We're going to do it a third time now? We're going to go back to closed primaries?
But Jindal's the one person that could, if the legislature passed it, he would be the one that could ensure it happened.
Well, and that of course, has had an impact on some elections in our state. And it certainly cost Don Cashew his congressional
Absolutely.
Seat in 2008. But, yeah, if Bobby – I think this is something that Trey and Scott can agree on. If Bobby Jindal gets in the race as a Republican for the U.S. Senate, it messes up Bill Cassidy's campaign big time.
Yeah, open or closed primary, absolutely.
So, and Trey, you're saying there's no loyalty there, that all is fair in love and war and politics.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact that Bill Cassidy had Timmy Teeple as his consultant, and then they parted ways, and now, as you say, he's got some more Vitter-aligned consultants working for him. That frees up Timmy if the governor decided to run for Senate. The fact of the matter is Bobby Jindal has been a masterful politician. I mean, despite his claims of being an outsider and always complaining about how awful government is and how bad politicians are, he's a career politician. I mean, he's been running for office pretty much nonstop since he started, and I don't think that there's any reason to believe that he's not going to continue running for office. That's what he's into, and that's what he's good at. I'm sure that despite the claims of Camp Jindal that they're not running for office, which is historically their pattern, I think anybody that watches this stuff can tell you that he's running for something. We just got to figure out what he decides he wants it to be.
He's very much like Mary Landrieu, right, who's held elective office since she was in her 20s, I believe?
Yeah.
20-something?
She took a year off.
A year.
that would take that right off the table for him. That's right.
Absolutely.
297-5633. Yeah, Mary Landrieu was elected to the Louisiana House of Representatives when she was 23, 8 years there, 8 years as treasurer, and now coming up on 17 years as a U.S. senator. So that's, according to my math, 33 of the last 34 years for Senator Landrieu in public life. Mark Downtown writes, Governor Christie of New Jersey stated the other day that his first job as a state governor is to take care of his state and the people he represents. He also said that a governor who makes decisions based on national ambition is not taking care of his primary job. It seems, writes Mark, by that criteria that Governor Jindal, writes Mark, is failing the people of Louisiana by making his decisions based on how they're received by national conservatives. What are your thoughts, Scott?
Well, I think that the people in New Jersey should just keep Governor Christie as long as he's willing to stay, because he has no place in the national party. And if I thought he would sign it, I would personally mail him a party switch card now, because I think he's the Charlie Crist 2.0.
So you Christie's too liberal for you, right?
I think he's too liberal for a lot of Louisiana Democrats. Maybe Trey might have a different take on that, but I think Trey might be more conservative than Mr. Christie up there.
What do you think of that flaming liberal Chris Christie, Trey Orso?
I think this is Scott's response to that question,
which was a non-response.
No, it was a very clear response, and I think it's part of the problem that some of these Republicans are having on a national basis. There's not a whole lot of room for dissension and different ideas in the Republican Party. They talk about a big tent, but it's really more like a phone booth. And I think it points directly to the reason why further in Governor Jindal's statement yesterday in Politico, these are his words, not mine, he says that the left thinks that people of faith are ignorant and uneducated. Pornography is fine. Traditional marriage is discriminatory, and red meat should be rationed. Now, those are not my words. I mean, those are his words. Traditional marriage is discriminatory. I don't even know red meat should be rationed. What does that mean? I mean, if that's not red meat for the conservative wing of the Republican Party, I don't know what is. And I think that the response to many Republicans to a guy like Chris Christie, who is willing to reach out and work with people from all parties, they get ostracized within the Republican Party, and it forces folks like Governor Jindal to write this kind of stuff in a national publication. And that's why I think that the Republicans are having a hard time winning on a national level right now, because there's just no room for discussion over there.
But doesn't the national party platform, the Democrat Party platform, just on the marriage issue, doesn't it basically say that if you believe only in traditional marriage, that is discriminatory, that it should be open to, if you want to marry a tractor, or you want to marry a BMW,
I don't think that's what we're talking about, Scott.
Well,
I think if you look around, Scott, you'll see that when Democrats disagree with their national platform, They don't have people sending them a change of party application saying, get on out of here.
Well, maybe.
We have room for dissension and discussion and a broader view of ideas within our party. I don't agree with everything in the national platform, but I think most would consider me a pretty loyal and Democrat. And so, Chris Christie, Chris Christie's the kind of guy that if the Republicans would nominate, would give Democrats the biggest headache next time. And he's the kind of guy that could get some moderate swing voters and give the Republicans a chance to take back the White House. But
all right, hold tight. 877-217-5757. Trey Orso, Democrat. Scott Wilfong, Republican. Dorothy in Goodwood. Dorothy, you're on the air. Good morning to you.
Oh, good morning, everybody. My comment is this. Bobby Jindal said the Republicans were acting like the stupid party. Well, yesterday, the stupid party was in good form because they passed an anti-abortion bill that is going absolutely nowhere. And all it does is rile up my wonderful base, which is Hillary in 2016. What do you think about that, Scott?
Well, I think the bill that they passed was, a good statement. Is there a political reality that it won't get passed? Sadly, yes, that's correct. I think Americans just saw this horrific situation in Philadelphia, where babies as old as 33 weeks in the womb were being killed. I think it's a response somewhat to that. And I think that if you look at polls, most Americans are pro-life.
But being pro-choice doesn't mean supporting what happened in Philadelphia, does it?
Well, no, but I think the bill specifically addresses that by prohibiting abortions, I believe it was 20 weeks. It was aimed towards that, you know, it was certainly a reflection of that, that children that have developed that far along in the womb should be afforded an extra level of legal protection. You know, we're certainly going to never settle that debate in this country, but, you know, when the Democrats were in the minority in the House, they certainly passed bills that were going nowhere when George Bush was president, when other Republicans have been president. So, you know, there's something to be said for both sides taking a stand for what their constituency believes. And certainly, you know, the abortion issue is something that Republicans feel strongly about.
Will that be an issue next year, Trey, in the Landru Cassidy or Landru Jindal race?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think down here that's going to be an issue.
I think the issue for that race, which is I still would love the answer to that, is why Mary Landru voted for the gun bill. You know, I could understand if Mary was the 60th vote to get that bill out of the Senate, but to be the 55th vote and to come from a state that passed the constitutional amendment a couple years ago with 80-something percent, we have the strongest gun laws in the nation. I'm sure there's a political reason. Maybe Trey can help me out on that one, but I haven't figured it out yet. And I think that will be a major issue, no matter who she responds.
For the increase in back, the one for the increase in background checks.
Yeah, that's the mansion to me. That's what she voted for.
She voted for that, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, a majority of Louisianans support that.
That's another one of those Democrat talking points.
Look, Scott, I don't know anybody that hunts more than I do. I got more guns than I care to talk about and strongly support the Second Amendment. But I don't see why, if I got to go to Bowie's Outdoor like I do all the time and buy a firearm, it takes 2 minutes for me to fill out a form and the guy calls it in and he comes back and says, okay, Mr. Orso, here's your rifle or here's your this, that, or the other. But if I want to go down to the Centroplex, or I guess we don't call it Centroplex anymore, the River Center, and buy AK-47 or any other gun, or go sell one to some dude off the street who I don't know who he is, what his mental state is, what his criminal background is, and I can just go do that because there's this gun show loophole. I mean, look, if it's good, if the gun stores and outfitters can do it in 2 minutes, hey, so can the people with technology now. They got phone lines and they got internet at the River Center down there. Just let them take 2 extra minutes to make sure you're not selling this assault rifle to a career criminal. Who is against that?
Except that that's not all that the bill does. It would also prohibit you from giving your father a shotgun. In fact, if you and your father or brother or son went quail hunting or squirrel hunting in North Louisiana and you handed the shotgun to your father and said, here, go over and check over there, I'm going to sit down for a minute, you just committed a felony.
Scott,
I don't think average Louisianians think that's common sense gun control.
Scott, baloney. I mean, come on, man.
Read the bill.
Get in the real world. That's not even close. Oh, I hand my dad a 20-gauge and, I've broken the law.
297-5633 is your number. More with Trey Orso and Scott Wilfong when we return after 90 seconds on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Inkster Show at WRKF.org. J.C. Kane producing and Scott Wilfong and Trey Orso with us a bit longer. They got into a discussion about gun rights and gun votes. Few moments ago, story today, front page of The Advocate, a judge on Tuesday struck down several exceptions to Louisiana's ban on juveniles possessing handguns, including a little-known provision allowing youngsters to carry handguns as long as they have written permission from a parent. This is from Judge Pamela Taylor Johnson of East Baton Rouge Parish Juvenile Court. She upheld the remaining language in the ban, which forbids handgun possession among youths under the age of 17. She ruled unconstitutional a separate firearms law that forbids the carrying of concealed weapons without a permit, though only as the statute pertains to juveniles. So, Scott, what's your take here? Should kids be allowed to carry guns?
I guess I'm struck by the whole, you know, situation. When's the last time anyone can remember a juvenile court judge or family court judge striking down a state law? They certainly have the authority to do so, but to strike this down, you know, actually, Judge Johnson is actually a great lady. She is a good judge and a good good Democrat as they go. But this was very much the same, I think, as what you saw in New Orleans with the judge wanting to get a little notoriety, wanting to get some red meat for their party. By trying to show up this bill that the voters passed 2 years ago, this constitutional amendment, to say, look how absurd and how extreme we are. These laws are just, these laws are unconstitutional based on this amendment. So it's just a little bit of, free press and currying some favor with their party. It's not going to go anywhere. That the Supreme Court will overturn that ruling and vacate it, I'm sure.
So you think it's okay if a youngster carries a handgun with written permission from his or her parents?
I think you would have to go back to I would want to look at when that law was passed and where that the details of the law. I haven't read the actual language of it. I'm sure it was intended. It had some basis in, as we said earlier, hunting or rural parts of Louisiana. And I'm sure there's a threshold. I doubt it goes all the way down to 10 years old, 11 years old, 6 years old. I'm all sure right. There's more to it than what we're seeing.
Well, Trey, you were offering a kind of a common sense approach, at least common sense from your perspective on gun possession, and Scott didn't buy it. This obviously will be an issue in the Landrieu race next year.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here thinking to myself about the conversation, you guys. I'm just trying to think about what parent gives a written slip to their juvenile to carry a concealed weapon.
I'm sure it's something like it. If you're hunting alligator, if your 16-year-old's hunting alligator in the swamp, need a 22 on their hip. Honestly,
once again, I've hunted ever since I was old enough to do it safely. And one thing about when you go hunting is you definitely don't need a concealed weapon. I mean, you're not trying to hide the gun from whatever game that you're after. So I don't think it would have anything to do with hunting. That's one place where you can go and carry a gun and nobody looks at you sideways. But anyway, I just think that's amazing. As far as the vote on the background check bill, yeah, I mean, the Republicans will try and make an issue out of that. But at some point, common sense has to prevail. And Mary Landrieu has been a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. But also, there are a lot of folks like me out there who are gun owners and gun enthusiasts who think that there can be some common sense put into the equation without just a bunch of name calling and scare tactics and requiring people, as I said, if I got to fill out a background check at Bowie's or Academy Sports, I don't see why they can't do the same 2-minute background check at the Centerplex or at Lamar Dixon at these gun shows. It only takes a couple minutes and we can ensure that we're not selling these assault weapons and other things to people who really legally shouldn't have them.
It also creates a registry. It's more than just an NICS check. It actually creates a registry of firearm ownership. So that's one of the biggest reasons why gun owners, they could see through the smoke and mirrors. It was nothing more than a first step towards gun registration.
Aren't you a proud gun owner?
I am.
Well, why not a registry then? What's the problem? What's the big deal about people knowing you have guns?
Well, I think if you look through history and you learn from history, every country in the world that's had some sort of gun confiscation, it began with knowing who has them. You can't confiscate what you don't know.
So this is the first step toward the government taking away your gun, Scott.
Well, government's taken away people's gold. Government's taken away people's benefits. Government's taken away a lot in the United States. So, no, I don't think it's a stretch to think that if they could take away gold, that one day they might decide they want to take away guns.
Republican leaders from Louisiana and 9 other states are meeting in Alabama. They're strategizing about many things, including Mary Landrieu's Senate race next year and how to beat her. This is going to be a major priority, I would imagine, on national attention will be on Louisiana. Much money will be spent on both sides. How do you view the race, Trey? Landrieu's had 3 close ones against Woody Jenkins, Susie Terrell, and John Kennedy. How does she fare in a year in which she will be running with a Democratic president who's not all that popular in Louisiana?
You talking about landslide Landrieu?
I am.
Look, there's no doubt that the race is going to receive a lot of attention, not only here in Louisiana, but throughout the country. There's no doubt you can bet your bottom dollar that there will be record amounts of outside money spent in Louisiana next year on the race. Those are facts. I mean, just write them down. But I really think that I think Senator Landrieu has positioned herself in a good spot. She's a hard worker. She's been doing a great job for Louisiana. She's strong on military issues. She's strong on coastal issues. She's been helpful to a lot of people in the state. And I don't think that, you know, hey, look, the president's not on the ballot next year. It's going to be Senator Landrieu against either Bill Cassidy or Bobby Jindal or whomever the Republicans finally decide to put up against her. And at the end of the day, I think she's going to prevail. Will she win by a huge margin? No, I mean, this is Louisiana. She's not going to win by a huge margin, but she's got a good organization. She's done a good job, and her record has been reflective of what people here in Louisiana want. So I think she's going to be in good shape.
One thing will determine that race, and that is how the country is once Obamacare is fully implemented. If it has a disastrous effect and people have lost their health care, their policies have gone out of sight, that'll be hung around her neck and she'll lose. If it doesn't pan out like that, and it actually, which I don't believe will be the case, but if it does, if it turns out to be somewhat positive or have a neutral effect, then she'll win.
All right. Well,
if that's the case, she'll be in good shape.
Thank you, Trey. Thank you, Scott. And
thank you.
We'll follow it with you. Take care.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And we're joined now, first, by John Kaufman, 8 years the marketing director at the Manship Theater, right downtown in the Shaw Center for the Arts. Not the CBI Center yet, is it?
No, it's not. It's not. No.
Well, tonight's a big night.
Tonight is.
Quite a presentation this evening.
Yeah, tonight is the inaugural kickoff of our Flamenco Rouge. It's a new show putting together with local people, and we're bringing in international and national flamenco artists and dancers, and this will be the kickoff tonight, and we're lucky to have Chris and Lena Yacome back in town. This will be the third visit to Baton Rouge for us, and tonight we're transforming the main stage of the theater into a cabaret, so the seating will be on the stage, the performance will be on the stage, and everything will take place right there on stage.
All right, this is Chris and Lena Yacome. Right. Now, let's get Lena to the other microphone, and she is the dancer, and Chris is the guitarist, and we might get a mini presentation of what's going to happen tonight. Hi, Lena. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
How long have you been dancing?
I've been dancing quite a while. I have a bachelor's and master's degree in dance, and I've been a professional flamenco dancer for about 10 years now.
And you and Chris know each other?
Yes, because we've been married for about 11 years now.
So I would hope you know each other pretty well.
Yes.
And you will be dancing for the masses with your husband playing the flamenco guitar.
Yes.
And he's got it in hand right here. Talk about coming prepared for a preview of tonight's show. Why don't you go ahead, Chris? Let's hear some of the work from this man who will be on stage tonight with his beautiful wife, Lena, at the Manship Theater at 7 p.m. And for more information, you may call 344-0334. That's 225-344-0334. Take it away, Chris Yacome. And Lena was dancing through the whole presentation here, so we got the full Monty here. How did you meet?
We met at a mutual friend's house. We met at a pool party in exotic Tempe, Arizona.
I bet it was hot.
It was.
More ways than one.
Yeah.
In Tempe, Arizona, and that was how many years ago?
About 11 and a half years ago.
Okay,
now.
So yeah. You got married pretty quickly.
Yeah, we didn't mess around. As soon as I knew that she called me back, I was like, I was on the trail real quick.
Marriage, I'm told, is tough enough as it is, but when you work together, my goodness, you never get away from each other.
That's true, but we get to experience things that we wouldn't be able to otherwise, as far as being able to travel together and share the experience of an audience, clapping for us together and being able to share all those experiences, that excitement going on and off the stage. And so we have a wonderful, wonderful time.
Well, some would say this is a kind of a lost art, but it's still prominent in some places. Where do you usually perform?
You know, we've been really, really fortunate that throughout the U.S. people have been very welcoming to this art form, even if they're unfamiliar with it. What's nice is that it does have so many different aspects to it, whether people like the be able to watch a show with the flamenco dancing, you get that visual aspect. You get some great different sounds and instrumentalists that play the art form, and then the singing. Mm-hmm. So it has a lot of elements to it.
When did you start dancing, Lena?
You know, I started right out of high school. So I started in college, 18.
You must have danced as a kid, though.
I didn't. I'm from a small mining town, so we didn't really have a dance studio there.
Which mining town?
Silver City, New Mexico.
Wow. So you come from the West, mm-hmm. and you're in Baton Rouge, and Flamenco Rouge, and it's being billed by Mr. Kaufman as the inaugural celebration of Flamenco Rouge. Is this going to be an annual affair?
It absolutely is. We're just kind of bringing flamenco in all different forms to Baton Rouge and starting programs with master classes and outreach. And Chris and Lena have kind of been at the forefront of this with us and helping us build it from the ground up. So we're really looking forward to what we're going to do with this and how it's going to grow in the future.
Well, they've been doing this for a while, but they're young people, and obviously, Lena has stayed in remarkable shape doing her dancing. There's nothing like dancing, maybe swimming, that keeps people in condition.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, it's all the fast footwork, you know, keeps me busy.
Yeah. So how do you prepare for something like this?
You know, I have a studio in my living room, and so every day rehearsing, teaching.
But you can't bring your living room with you.
Or... No, it's just conditioning every day, practice every day, yeah.
And Chris is all smiles, obviously proud of the work that he and his wife have done. When did you decide that, hey, we need to collaborate and make this something to behold for the masses throughout the United States and beyond?
I don't know that it was a direct one-day decision. It just kind of evolved. I was in charge of a very large flamenco dance company. And Lena, as she earlier stated, was already doing other styles of dance, mm-hmm. and she thought, well, let me give this flamenco style a go. And within a couple months, she was hooked and stopped dancing pretty much every other modern or ballet, and now she's been strictly flamenco, like you said, for over 10 years. So,
what is the biggest distinction between your type of dancing now and what we might see in other dance presentations?
Well, with flamenco, it's the art of flamenco includes singing, guitar, live music, mm-hmm. accompaniment. So if I speed up the rhythm, they follow me. So it's very empowering for a dancer. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of control and,
So are you speeding up the rhythm, or are you following? Who's following whom here?
That's a very interesting question. That's what makes it so challenging for a flamenco dancer, is that they have to learn how to conduct. However, there are parts where they hand it off to the musicians and singers, and then we'll do a musical interlude, and they'll be following us. But for the most part, when they're up in front, everybody's following them. They tell us what to do.
Well, tonight, the Manship Theater main stage will be transformed into an intimate cabaret setting for this performance. Does that mean you still have the 325 front row seats, John Kaufman?
You do, but they will not be filled tonight. That will all take place on the stage.
All on stage.
All on stage.
All on stage. So this is like an audience participation type thing. What if people get up and start dancing?
That's encouraged, I would think, as long as we're not in their way.
And it should be quite an event and something new in the inaugural celebration of the Flamenco Rouge featuring Chris and Lena Giacomo and some other artists as well. You're not going to be up there alone, are you?
We have a third artist, a wonderful flamenco guitarist.
Is it Kaufman?
Maybe we can get him up there. I don't know. We'll see. But a wonderful flamenco artist from, he's currently based in Toronto, Canada. His name is Nick Hernandez, and a great, great artist. So he's going to be joining us too.
All right. Tonight, 7 p.m., Manship Theater, downtown. Thank you, everybody, for listening. For J.C. Kane, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at wrkf.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.